Trofinco's Valor Program for veteran entrepreneurs is especially tailored to support veterans in transitioning to business ownership with dedicated financial solutions and resources. For traveling entrepreneurs, the program offers flexibility and support in funding, critical for those exploring new markets. Business owners will find the personalized approach and understanding of veteran needs invaluable for expanding operations or starting new ventures. Empower your entrepreneurial journey with the Valor Program and turn your business vision into reality. New U-Life Somaderm Gel. Travelers and business owners can benefit from enhanced energy levels and improved sleep quality. Crucial for adjusting to new time zones and maintaining peak performance during business operations. Entrepreneurs will appreciate the potential anti-aging effects, supporting a dynamic, youthful appearance vital for first impressions. Click here now to revitalize your body's natural rhythms and present your best self in every meeting and adventure.
Welcome to The Tactical Traveler, the podcast where adventure meets precision and the journey is just as important as the destination. Bringing you the inside scoop on the most thrilling and efficient travel experiences. Each episode, we'll dive into the art of travel, from navigating off the beaten path destinations to mastering the art of packing like a pro. So buckle up, get your compass ready, and let's embark on a new adventure with Tactical Traveler. Here's your host, John Rankin.
Hey everybody, I just want to welcome you to the Tactical Traveler. Today, I have a very special guest with me all the way from London, Alexis Perrender. Did I say that right?
You did. Thank you for having me, John. Good.
I always try to make sure I get you guys' names right. You know, it's important that we properly introduce people. And I just want to take an opportunity to welcome you to the show. Just in the couple of times we've talked leading up to it, it's been really great to hear from you and some of the crazy stuff that you're doing. How's things going for you over there in London?
Yeah, brilliant, John. Thanks for asking. It's a real pleasure to be on the show. I've listened to some episodes and I really support what you're doing here. So glad to be a part of it. And it is a sunny spring day in London.
Now, how many of those do you get a year?
Well, it depends. When everyone's in lockdown, we get quite a lot, but a lot of them, not many.
That's so unfortunate. So it was funny because I was in London in September of 2019. So before all that, and I actually specifically set my flights up to do a very long layover in London so I could experience London and just kind of was walking around to some of the pubs and, you know, just, I did it all by foot. You know, I just walked around and enjoyed the city. It was pretty funny. So September, I thought it would be a little warmer than it was, you know, so, and it went from mid-morning was pretty bright, pretty sunny, to by 1 o'clock, it was getting dark. Like the clouds were rolling in and I was like, oh man, it's going to ruin my day.
Yeah, that can happen. September's a very hit and miss month. So what were your impressions of London?
I absolutely loved it. I don't know how to quite say it, but I don't think there's ever been a location that I didn't really love. You know, I love some places more than others, but, you know, I was out there, I was on my way to Norway to do some training in Norway, and I just loved it. It was, you know, your rail system can be a little intimidating at first, because I landed in, which airport did I land in? I think I went into, was it Heathrow?
Heathrow, it's a good one.
Yeah, I think that's the one I landed in. I flew out of a different one, but to get on the rail system and understand all the complexities of you guys' rail system, at first I was like, oh my God, this is a little bit more than I thought it was going to be. So, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I've been living here on and off for quite a while now, and I'm still not perfect at that. I still get on the wrong train and the wrong tube and the wrong bus every so often. So easy mistake to make.
Yeah. And then I flew out of Gatwick. Yeah. So I flew into Heathrow and then I flew out of Gatwick, I think is how it worked. Or maybe it was reversed. But I set that whole trip up. I actually flew for free. And what I did was I flew from Chicago to London specifically so I could explore London, and then carried on to Norway. The entire trip was like a $300 ticket there and back. Wow. And then I used points to basically not pay anything. And then in Norway, I landed in Stavanger, but then flew back from Oslo. So it was quite a complex kind of itinerary, but you know, for 300, and I think it was $90, it's, you can't really complain. So
yeah, sounds like a great time.
No, it was. And you know, I wanted to do more of, I think, the pub culture, you know, because I landed during midday and flew out late at night. I didn't get to see as much as I wanted to, but it was really the only time I had to get to London. So, and then I got to do a couple of the, you know, I went to Big Ben was down though. They were, I don't know if they're still doing the remodel, but they were
going on for ages.
Oh, is still going on?
I think so. I mean, last time I checked, I don't go around that part of town that often, but I think they're still doing it. Yeah.
Huh. Crazy. Yeah. And then I wanted to get out to Stonehenge, but by the time I figured it out with the rental car and, you know, just the driving distance from London, I just opted not to do it and use it as an excuse to come back again. So, you know. Mm-hmm. Now, you have a really interesting story. You're a comedy filmmaker with a passion for traveling off the beaten path. Tell me a little bit about this comedy filming and what that looks like, and then how you've managed to connect that to the travel world and what that means for you now.
That's a good question. So, I've been traveling independently since I was about 16. Me and my friends used to kind of travel through Europe and kind of camp in weird places. Like, we camped on a roundabout once, and we got moved on by police in a couple of city parks and camped in beautiful wilderness places as well. I've always kind of carried a camera while traveling. And in recent years especially, I've been really trying to make kind of comedy travel documentaries. And I say comedy because, I mean, I love comedy anyway. I'm a comedy writer. I thrive on kind of surrealist comedy. But in regards to how it links to the travel world, I found that there's always comedy happening when you're traveling, you know, especially when you're off the beaten track, because you don't really know what's going to happen. I mean, I think that's the main reason why I like to go off the beaten track, because you just don't know what you're going to find. And often that can lead to situations that are unusual and interesting. And obviously meeting people, and humor inherently runs through people. So yeah, I mean, that's kind of a brief introduction.
Yeah. So in all your travels, what would you say has been the most comedy filled moment, whether you got to capture it on camera or not?
Okay. Yeah, that's an interesting one. I think maybe going through China. I'm not sure. It's just like the way they do certain things over there is so different to the way we do things. And that can lead to kind of like a lot of comedy moments, especially with miscommunications around language, you know, like when you're traveling through places where no one speaks English, and you know, my Chinese could do with a lot of work, to say the least. You know, you resort to like hand gestures and trying to buy things and order things on restaurant menus just by pointing and gesturing. And like the way they do things in China is like totally different. Like even when they're saying the price of something by holding up fingers, they do like the first four fingers normally, like we do in the West. And then from 5 through to 10, they've got a different symbol for each digit. So someone puts like their thumbs together in a cross shape to kind of say what the price is. And then obviously you're kind of a bit lost at that. So that there's a lot of kind of moments in China.
Right. You're completely lost. You're like, what does that mean?
Yeah. I mean, I'll give you one example of just one comedy moment. It was quite a long time ago now, but it just springs to mind. It was a Friday night, and me and my friend Tom were traveling through this. It's like a national park in China. And even though we were in a kind of quite a quiet village, sort of on the edge of the jungle, we thought it's a Friday night. We want to go and see if something's happening. And we left our little hotel and we followed these kind of sounds of distant music into the forest. And we kept walking and walking and the sounds got louder. We were expecting this kind of crazy rave or something. And it was a group of Chinese old age pensioners doing a karaoke thing around a fire. And it was brilliant. And we joined in, and me and Tom were singing karaoke, even though all the lyrics coming up were in Chinese. So we were just making up all the words as we went and just saying all kinds of nonsense. But you know, they loved it. All the old people were really, really complimentary. So yeah.
Right. Now, did you catch that on film?
Yeah, I did. I still need to edit that, but it is on film somewhere. Yeah.
Awesome. Now you also have two documentaries that you've done that are available on your YouTube channel, which I'm going to give everybody at the end of the show and do a shout out for you and your YouTube channel. But tell me about those and really what is the kind of thrust of those two documentaries?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So one of them is called Salty Tea, A Journey Through Central Asia, and that covers Kyrgyzstan, Kazakhstan, and the western part of China, Xinjiang province. And the other one is called Not Tourist Area, A Journey Through Myanmar, which is the one that I've recently finished and I've been sharing around at the moment. And obviously the situation in Myanmar now is becoming pretty horrendous. Like, I'm in contact with people there on the ground who say it's getting worse and worse every day, and just, you know, children are being shot and stuff. But I mean, this was before the situation got bad like that. And we basically decided that we wanted to travel to remote parts of northern Myanmar, because even though once the country did open up, there was kind of quite a thriving backpacking scene, it was all focused around certain specific spots. So there were still quite big areas of the country that didn't get too many visitors, and we didn't really know what to expect there. So we went there, and basically in both films, we just kind of filmed what happened. And yeah, and both times a narrative kind of gets threaded out of it quite naturally, just from how we were doing it, I think.
Yeah. So just because before we focus on Myanmar, because that is there's a lot of stuff happening over there right now that probably, I don't know about in the UK, but in the US, I don't think many people outside of like the travel community would really understand what's happening. But talk to me about Kyrgyzstan for a little bit. And was it Tajikistan? Which one did you go to? The second one?
It was, so the first one was Kyrgyzstan. You know, they've got two with very similar names, like with the G. So Kyrgyzstan, Kazakhstan, and Xinjiang. So the western part of China. That was lovely. That was a lovely trip. We met so many amazing people. Like a lot of the cultures around there have got a real hospitality culture. So we ended up being invited into people's homes and offered meals like time and time again. And, you know, drinking with lovely Kazakh characters and even performing on stage at a wedding there. Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah. So tell me about the narrative that got developed on that particular trip.
Okay. Well, I mean, a lot of that, again, kind of came down to, obviously, all the places that we go seem to get in the news after we've been there. So you might have seen in regards to Xinjiang in northwest China, there's a lot of human rights violations going on there at the moment as well. There's talks of kind of sort of detention camps that Uyghur people are being kept in horrific conditions. Mm. And when we're in that part of China, it's a place where foreigners have to tread carefully. There are big areas that you're not really meant to go to, but everywhere you go there's a very high police presence and a very high army presence. Like, you'd see parks in cities that are kind of 100 meters squared, and you have to go through airport security and barbed wire fences and armed guards just to get into them. So yeah, I guess quite a lot of the narrative kind of developed around the challenges we had. Kind of, I mean, I think both films have got kind of similar themes. It's kind of like overcoming the authorities and all the bureaucracy they've put in place on travel to kind of get in touch with the real people and the real country, and you sort of see the great side of the people rather than the kind of the side you see on the news in regards to the authorities and the violence that happens there.
Right, right.
Root Brands Wellness's Zero In offers a competitive edge over other nootropics like Joe Rogan's Alpha Brain by focusing on natural gut health axis optimization, providing clearer cognitive function and sustained attention without artificial stimulants. Travelers will benefit from enhanced mental clarity during long journeys, while entrepreneurs and business owners can leverage improved focus for strategic planning and execution. Elevate your mental game beyond conventional limits and outperform your competition with Zero In today.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm aware of what's started to transpire in Myanmar. And so when did you go to Myanmar and why were you going there? What was the kind of idea in the back of your head that made you select Myanmar?
Well, I think it's a country that a lot of people who love traveling want to go to. It features quite high up a lot of people's lists because it's got a kind of mystique about it, you know, like obviously Southeast Asia's all lovely countries anyway, but Myanmar in particular, I think because it was closed off for so many years and because, you know, we've all seen so many photos of beautiful spots there and intriguing kind of almost mystical cultures. But I mean, I was in Vietnam beforehand. I was actually living with my girlfriend in Vietnam for a short while and teaching English at school there. So cool. Myanmar kind of worked because it was not too far away, and my friend flew out and joined me there.
Okay. And so it really started out as a trip that, hey, there's this place that few people have really gotten to explore, so I'm going to go explore.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
All right. And when was that? It was pre-COVID, right?
Yeah, so that was in 2019. Yeah, but pre-COVID. Although there are a few people wearing face masks in our video, which kind of gives it a bit of a timeless feel because you're not quite sure when it was filmed. A lot of people have commented on that.
Yeah. The Asian communities, by and large, definitely had more of the face mask, kind of wearing that even when there's not an outbreak. Even when I was in Japan in the late 90s, there were people wearing face masks. So. But that's not something that I particularly find to be new. But probably for many people in the UK and the US, they would start to wonder, I guess. Especially if they're not well traveled. So now you went to some of the areas that were really off the beaten path. Tell me about those. Where'd you go and why? You know, it takes a certain personality to not only go somewhere that's not typically gone to, but then to say, on top of that, I want to make sure I go to the places that even when people visit this country, they won't go to. So tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I kind of touched on before, it comes down to this thing that if you kind of set yourself a route, which is fairly A to B, without kind of just sculpting it around the destinations that everyone goes to, you end up in all kinds of unexpected places that you would never normally go to. Like you go through a lot of small towns and villages that are maybe they don't have anything particular of note, but because you're a novelty there, because they don't get many visitors, you end up having a lot more interesting human experiences, I've often found. I guess that was part of the reason why we decided to head to those places. I mean, the thing in Myanmar, which we didn't really know properly until we got there and sort of discovered the hard way, but they've got a very complicated system of restricted areas, which is kind of changing the whole time and very vague. So even within there's like one or two big chunks of the country, which is a really restricted area. But even in the areas which are meant to be okay to travel in, oftentimes, if you go away from the big towns into the smaller rural areas, you're technically breaking rules there. And even when you're not, there are lots of places where you can go there during the day, but you are not allowed to stay at a hotel there, which became a bit of a problem for us.
Hey, and what was the reason that it wasn't allowed in those rural areas? I mean, we see what's happening now, and we'll get into that in a little bit. But like when you were there, which was before the high level of conflict that they're seeing now, were you ever given a reason why you couldn't travel to those sections or stay at late at night or whatever?
Mm-hmm. I mean, the reason given was always just that it was against the rules. You know, like nobody, it's not really in the way of thinking of a kind of a Burmese policeman to explain why it's the rules. It's just the rules, so you follow it. Yeah.
So 2019, you're there, you're exploring way off the beaten path. Would you have been able to tell, based on kind of what you were seeing then, that it would have devolved into what's happening now?
I would have had no idea, to be honest, John. I mean, yeah, I'm sorry. I perhaps didn't answer the question you asked before that excellently. Would you mind asking it to me again, perhaps?
Yeah, so, you know, while you were there, did you get a sense or did you see anything that would have, you know, kind of predicted that it would have devolved into the conflict that we see over there now? Were there like any, you know, signals? Anything that you would have picked up on?
No, not at all. I mean, obviously, even when we were there, there was the Rohingya crisis going on. But, you know, everyone we saw seemed happy. And even in areas with quite a high police presence, that, you know, the citizens and the police and the army all seemed to be getting on reasonably well. But I mean, I think part of the reason why we weren't allowed to go to certain areas and to sleep in certain places is that there's just this sort of, because tourism is new there, they still don't properly understand it. And obviously what we do in regards to going to quite strange off the beaten track places is not kind of normal. So people, some of the people like in the police and the army, as soon as you are away from the obvious place that a foreigner would want to go to, they start kind of asking why. And one of the possible reasons for why is that you're a spy or something like that. So when we did have difficult situations, a lot of the time it was just kind of reaffirming that, you know, we were just kind of harmless tourists who happened to have stumbled in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah, so for and I don't know about the UK, but in the US, why don't you just explain for the listeners what's actually taking place in Myanmar now? And were you in the regions that are being really affected by tyranny over there right now?
Well, at the moment, right now, even in the capital, tyranny is happening. Like it has gone from being a country that was, for the most part, incredibly safe, as long as you stayed in the right places, to a country where, you know, civilians are being shot, children are being shot in the capital city, in the kind of places that back when I was there, you know, families, tourists, children, everybody would roam freely. I mean, I am in touch with people on the ground, and I mean, their English isn't always the best, but the basic kind of situation, as far as I'm aware, is just that every day things are getting worse and worse, and the military are spreading to more remote parts of the country. They've even been sometimes kidnapping people from villages to work as porters. It's getting really bad there at the moment, and I can only hope that things do improve and that this doesn't last for too long.
Yeah, it reminds me, you know, as we've just been talking and hearing your story, it reminds me of when I was in Guatemala and in the midst of their Revolutionary War. Like, the culture can change on a dime whenever you get like a tyrannical, you know, government that just starts to oppress people. It's really unfortunate. And then when you have that connection with those people and you get to experience their culture and their generosity and their food and their way of life, it really hits you more. I think it hits you more strongly. Where,
oh, yeah, definitely.
Man, I was just there. I can't believe it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And because, I mean, you know people who are there, it gives it a human touch. You know, that there's so many atrocities going on in various parts of the world that you get kind of desensitized to it, don't you? Because you're always seeing it on the news. But when it's places you've been to and places you know, and obviously most importantly, people you know, it suddenly takes on a whole new element, a whole new level of realness.
Yeah, it really does. This might be a, you know, because again, it's culture based, but in the UK, how is kind of like your gallivanting across the world to do film and, you know, just to travel, how is that kind of perceived? In America, I think a lot of people, if they see you traveling too much, it's almost like you're a gypsy and not responsible. What's that look like for you in the UK?
I think people are fairly tolerant for the most part. I mean, I think the number of people from the UK doing backpacking has like massively gone up in recent years. And friends who a few years ago might never really have traveled are starting to travel. So I'd say generally there's a fairly positive perception and people are interested to hear your stories. Definitely.
Definitely in the pubs, right?
Yeah.
So talk to me a little bit about the UK right now with the coronavirus. What's that like for you guys today? Are you guys on lockdown? Has things started to ease? What's the like? What's the kind of overall feeling of the British people towards everything that's transpiring right now in London?
Well, we've been kind of on a lockdown of sorts, on and off, for at least 6 months now. You know, if not the whole year since this started, really. And you know, the rules have been changing the whole time. But at the moment, we're kind of coming out of the latest lockdown. Like, people are allowed to meet again outside. Pubs are open, but only pub gardens. And as in regards to the mood of the people, I mean, it's very rare, very, very varied, I suppose. There has been some opposition to the lockdowns, but again, there's been a lot of acceptance of it, I've found. And a lot of people, yeah, are kind of quite happy to go along with it.
Yeah, because there's been a, you know, I think that by and large, Europeans tend to be a little more mellow. Like Americans, I think, tend to be a little bit more hot-blooded. And the Europeans kind of are, we'll see what happens, you know? Just from my travels to Europe, they seem to be far more laid back, like a less stressful kind of view of things. And we've begun to hear just a tad bit. They keep it really quiet, but we've been starting to hear about, you know, in Germany and some of the other countries like France and Italy, that the people have become very unaccepting of any of more of the lockdowns. I didn't know if that was happening in London or the UK at large.
I would say it's not really that much. Other European countries, there's a lot more opposition. On the mainland, I think, as a general rule, especially in France, you know, there's been like big protests in France, right? Like, I think that the mood in the air here is that if you were going to go on an anti-lockdown protest, you're kind of selfish and a bit of a conspiracy theorist. That's the kind of prevailing mood, I would say.
Interesting. I wonder, you know, I was just watching actually a video with the French police throwing down their like badges and stuff and basically telling the French government they're not going to enforce it anymore. Why do you think there's the disparity between the British and like the French or the Italians?
I don't know. I mean, I guess part of it could be that I think we never had quite as strict a lockdown as those countries did. I mean,
sure.
Yeah, there's always been, I guess, a little bit of flexibility in the rules here. I mean, you were never going to get arrested for going for a walk in the park that wasn't near your house or something like that. And I think perhaps it's been enforced in a little bit more of a strict way in some of those mainland European countries. So that might be what it is. Just a guess, but yeah.
Yeah, see, and we don't really hear much of it, you know, like I didn't know that there was even that level of a lockdown overseas, like that you would be. Now, I knew in some of the Asian countries, like you could be arrested going to the doctor for anything that was not considered emergency. I had read about that.
I had a couple of friends that got stuck overseas, and they were talking about that for non-Westerners, the level of the lockdown was like really kind of like crazy. So I didn't even know that about, you know, France or Italy. So that's kind of interesting. I always find that the way that people from different cultures respond to events, to, you know, things like this worldwide pandemic, always find people's responses to be some of the most interesting conversations. Because I love that about travel, the ability to go somewhere and to have a conversation and just to hear the way that somebody from a different country thinks about events, whether that be localized events or nationwide events or worldwide events, you know, because travel really does help us to open up our mind and to understand somebody else's experience. And it's so valuable just to listen. Yeah. So again, even with like Miramar, that is something that I don't think that a majority of our listeners even knows transpiring. And I don't, and again, I don't know what the news cycle is like in London. But would you say that most British people are aware of what's happening?
I mean, they might be aware that something is happening, but I don't know, the way the media works and the way the news works, there's always something bad happening in some country far away. And I think for a lot of people, it just blends in. I mean, it's sad, but, you know, like one person dies down the street from you and people end up caring a lot more than, you know, 1,000 people dying in a distant country in the Middle East or something, which is sad, but... Yeah, I mean, I don't know. That's just the way the news works.
Yeah, yeah. So, all right, as we kind of wrap up here a little bit, I want you to talk about your YouTube channel. I'm going to post your links and stuff from your social media accounts. So if somebody doesn't, you know, catch it while we're talking about it, it will be in the episode notes where they can follow you. But tell me a little bit about your YouTube channel and where people can find you, where's the best way to get a hold of you?
Yeah, sure. I was just wondering, John, if I should, there was one story in particular about the angry mob and then the village that afterwards, maybe I should kind of go through
sure.
that. Because that,
yeah,
that,
tell me about it.
Yeah, so one of our craziest experiences, I mean, it relates back to what I was saying about how once you went into the smaller towns, you couldn't find anywhere to stay. The hotels would turn you around. So when we first found this out, me and my friend were like a little bit gutted because we thought we might not be able to do our trip properly and travel to the places we want to go to. But we decided the next morning to go to a market and just buy like some hammocks or something to sleep in. So in the worst case scenario, we could just go and find like a kind of a tree to sleep under or something like that. So we went to the market. We couldn't find any hammocks. We could just find like a straw mat and a mosquito net that we really hoped we wouldn't have to use. And we headed back out into the wilderness. So we spent a whole day hitchhiking away from this small town called Moniwa and out west into kind of scrubland. And it was on the way to like a national park. So we thought that, you know, it should be a reasonable place to travel to. Even if they don't get many travelers, there must be some people who pass through on a way to a national park. But we got to like the last town before the proper wilderness started as the sun was beginning to go down. And found they only had one hotel. And we went to the hotel and asked if we could stay there. And there was a long pause. The hotel owners took our passports, gave them to some guy on a motorbike who drove away and came back about half an hour later to tell us that we couldn't stay there. So me and my friend, we didn't really want to head all the way back to the town we come to in the morning. So we started walking out into the wilderness. And as we walked out into the wilderness, lots of people were kind of... watching us and sort of bantering with us, laughing at us because we were foreign and we were traveling with a guitar as well. So we decided we should hitchhike a little bit further out so we weren't kind of so recognizable. So as the sun was going down, we managed to hitch a lift on the back of this pickup truck. And it took us out, I don't know, like 20 kilometers or something until we got to a kind of small village. And at this point we thought, okay, well, you know, it is what it is. We're just going to have to walk out into the bush and find a place to pitch up our mosquito net. So we did that. between two trees with a straw mat on the ground. And it was a little bit dodgy. Like there were lots of kind of holes all around where the mosquito net was. We weren't really sure, you know, what lived down them. So it was a little bit sketchy, but we kind of thought it's fine. We'll just get a bit of sleep, get up early in the morning and head on towards the national park. And as it got dark and we were lying down, going to sleep, it was quite atmospheric because, you know, we were near several Buddhist monasteries. So you could hear a kind of a soundscape of like all the evening worship going on. It was actually quite peaceful. But then after about, I don't know, half an hour, these eight motorbike lights started going down this track that was kind of adjacent to us. And I woke up my friend and I said, "Kia, like, look at all these lights. I think some people are onto us." And he's like, no, it's not for us. But then the lights changed. And what was happening was people were getting off the motorbikes. And there was like seven or eight people that we could just see as kind of distant lights kind of slowly coming towards us. You know, it was a little bit like some kind of Special Encounters type film because everything was totally black apart from all these lights coming closer and closer. And we kind of got up and we started waving like, hello, it's okay. Mingalaba, which means hello in Burmese. But we kind of realized they were forming formation into a formation. And when the group of people came out of the light into the area around us, the guy at the front was holding a stick, a big stick behind his head, sort of staring at us furiously. And all of his kind of friends had their fists up. And we were sort of surrounded and we put our hands up because, you know, we were a little bit worried. We're not six times MMA world champions like yourself. So
yeah, I mean, that's even as a six-time world champion, that's an intimidating situation.
Oh yeah. Oh, definitely. But it all went uphill from there, to be honest. So I think they were just scared that some people were invading their village or something, or were some kind of thieves or criminals, and they just didn't know what to make of us. But once they surrounded us and we were kind of sort of staring each other down, we started a really slow kind of diplomatic process. So I started playing guitar, basically. I started like improvising some songs and my friend got out the Translate app on his phone and started explaining who we were and what we were doing. You know, we're just travelers going to this national park. We're from Britain. And eventually sort of think that the tension died away. And the one person who just spoke a tiny bit of English said just like, "Oh, come, don't sleep here. Dangerous snakes, sleep village." So we're like, okay, cool. So we started packing up our stuff and heading back towards the village. And as we went back towards the village, more and more search groups came out. Like what had basically happened is that an alert had gone out that there was two strange people in the bush and half of the village had gone out to look for us. So it was a little bit like in England, we have this festival called Bonfire Night, and every November, everyone goes out to watch the fireworks. It felt a little bit like that with all these groups of people looking for us. And when we got back to the village, there were even more people lining the streets. It was almost like we'd won a marathon or something, and we were being congratulated as we arrived in the village. And we got taken to someone's house, and yeah, the mood had totally changed. Like it was great. We were sort of laughing around with these guys. You know, even though no one spoke English, you know, just sort of David Beckham, London, you know, playing a bit.
Yeah, that's kind of unique. So did that come from the hotel, you think? I mean, first of all, I can't believe you gave them your passport to take off with. Like my gut, now that could be because of my experience in Afghanistan, but I'd be like, whoa, where are you going with my passport? No. You know,
I think there was like a kind of 15-minute period when we started to get a bit worried, but they had good intentions in the end. So, yeah, I don't know where it came from. I wonder if maybe just a farmer or someone saw two figures walking out and setting up a camp in the middle of the, but I mean, you know, word travels fast, like in these places. And we actually weren't in the place where we had food for that long until the crowd kind of cleared away and these two cars pulled up and a group of four policemen got out and came over and started questioning us. And these guys actually spoke English sort of properly. And they were the first people with a good English level. So we couldn't kind of we couldn't hide from the interrogation, basically. And they kind of questioned us and asked us what we were doing. And they told us it was a restricted area, which we had no idea about. And in the end, they basically said, okay, well, you can't be here. You've got to come back with us. So we got into this police car and started driving back to the town we'd initially come from. Again, feeling a bit worried, feeling a bit tense. But then sort of halfway along the journey, one of the police in the front of the car said, hey, man, you've got a guitar, play us a song. And we started playing and the policemen were loving it. And we were just sort of like, everyone was rapping and beatboxing and singing along. And we kind of, we had a proper jam session with these two police and it was great. So when by the end, we got back to the town, they took us to the hotel we'd been rejected from earlier, sorted out some paperwork so we could stay there. And everything ended ended happily, basically.
That is so interesting. You know, when you think about it too, had you guys responded differently, how you could have been in jail.
Yeah, I mean, there's always a risk in that kind of country. I mean, like, I think 9 times out of 10, you're going to be fine. But yeah, every so often you do hear about examples when that kind of thing goes badly, I guess. It's a good point.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's just good that they even spoke enough English to be able to kind of sort through what had transpired, why you were there. And it is something to be aware of. And even funny when you think about it, that here we are in the greatest technological advance of history. And here's these areas you guys didn't even know were restricted.
Yeah, I know. Like,
so yeah, and it's just so, I mean, it's definitely a crazy story. And when you look at the ramifications of the story, I mean, man, you guys could really could have been in some trouble.
Yeah, I mean, afterwards we kind of thought about what we were going to do next, because we thought, you know, we can't risk, whenever we go out into the countryside, getting, you know, potentially arrested or surrounded by an angry gang. You know, it is fine to do that once, but not every day, thank you. So we kind of thought about, we went back to the big town, thought about what we were going to do. And in the end, we identified this region of northwestern Myanmar that isn't visited much at all, but as far as we can make out, wasn't restricted, called Chin State, which is, it borders India. So all the people there are, they're not ethnically Burmese. They're from a variety of ethnic minority groups, and they're mostly Christian. And we headed up to that area, rented motorbikes, and spent like a week or 2 weeks just traveling around these remote mountain villages up there. And that is, I mean, if you ever get a chance to go to Myanmar, I would definitely recommend going to Chin State. Like, you'll never go to a place with kind of warmer people, to be honest.
What part of the trip was that for you? Was that like, did you swing up to that area, or were you in that area most of the time?
I say we spent about half of our trip in that area, or maybe a bit less than half, because I mean, we hadn't originally planned to go there, but just the way things transpired and some of the rules and risks, it just seemed like the kind of the most obvious place to go that was still what we wanted, like an interesting, unusual place to explore, but without so many risks. And we had a great time there. I mean, we were not really experienced motorbike drivers, and there were times when we were going on quite challenging off-road terrain that was a bit dodgy with these, you know, rented motorbikes that they weren't in the best shape. But I mean, it really paid off. Like, we got to this one village in the middle of nowhere, and when we arrived, there was instantly like a bit of a strange atmosphere. Like, what are these guys doing? I, you know, haven't seen foreign people here before. But before long, we got invited into somebody's house, the local English speaker or something. And we were very lucky there, because we had two friends in the village called Annie and Ting, who both spoke good English, who'd grown up in the village but worked abroad. And they both just happened to be there visiting family at the time we were there, so they could kind of translate for us. And they actually told us that no foreigners had been to that village since the 1930s. So surprised to see us, you know.
Dude, that's crazy. The 1930s.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, again, because I don't know if we caught this, what caused you to really pick Myanmar? I know you said it's because not many people been there,
saw some great pictures. But I mean, you're looking at the map, or you're looking at whatever you're looking at to make a decision on where to go next. What pulled you to Miramar?
I mean, I would say there was quite a bit of randomness there, to be honest, John. I mean, you know, there's so many amazing destinations in the world, and I'm sure we've both traveled enough to know that you can have good experience in so many places. So, I mean, in an ideal world, I'd like to visit every country in the world. So, yeah, I can't think of any specific reason why we went there as opposed to other countries, other than it just having a certain mystique and just being in a geographically convenient location, seeing as I was already teaching in Vietnam at the time.
What would you say that total trip cost you?
Yeah, I was thinking about this. I mean, it was a very cheap country, to be honest. I mean, maybe the accommodation is a little bit more expensive than other Southeast Asian countries, but we were away for, I think, like we were in Myanmar for like 5 weeks, and in US dollars, maybe something like $700 for the whole trip in terms of living expenses.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really the kind of person who writes everything down and keeps accounts, so there's a certain bit of guesswork there. But I think about it, that's a kind of ballpark figure, obviously, that not including flights, though.
Right. What were your flights to get there?
I think my flight to get back cost about £300.
One way. Okay.
Yeah, I was in Vietnam for about 3 months or something. I hadn't pre-planned the trip, so I just bought a one-way ticket back via Sri Lanka. I spent a day in Sri Lanka on the way back, which was quite interesting as well, because it was not long after they'd had the terrorist attacks there, so it was kind of a weird atmosphere there.
Sure. Well, that's great, man. So tell me real quick about your YouTube channel and where people can find you on social media.
Oh, yeah, sure. So my YouTube channel is called Guava Funk. And yeah, that's also my Instagram. And yeah, on my YouTube channel, I've got the film documenting our journey through Myanmar and, you know, encountering this lynch mob and the police and visiting the village that hadn't been visited since the 1930s. And yeah, so that's basically it, Guava Funk on YouTube.
Cool. I will be putting that up in the podcast notes so people can find you. I love it, man. That's a great story. Great footage for you guys to see Myanmar and to see some of the uniqueness. Now, last question here. What's the next project? So you did Kyrgyzstan. Now you did Myanmar. Where are you heading to next? Granted that COVID kind of lets you.
Me and my friend Keir have been thinking about going somewhere in Africa, because we traveled a lot in different parts of Europe and Asia. And we're thinking, yeah, why not go somewhere in Africa, perhaps East Africa? But it's, you know, the world's changing so much at the moment with COVID and stuff. So I don't really know. I should also, by the way, I forgot to mention, we're also running a crowdfunding campaign for one of the villages we visited in Chin State, Myanmar. So it was this place called Bo Chung Village, which is the village we visited that hadn't been visited since the 1930s. We had a lovely time there. You know, we got invited to stay a few nights. We even went to a wedding, performed on stage at the wedding. But this village has got quite a lot of problems. Like the nearest hospital is, I think, 150 miles away. So jeez. People who've had, yeah, you can imagine that's not too easy for people who have serious illnesses or injuries. So one of
When I post that stuff, when we're done here, just send me that link and I'll make sure to get that posted in there too.
Yeah, sure. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, listen, man, thoroughly enjoyed it. I'm going to post the link for the Myanmar trip in the notes so people can get a sense of what we've been talking about today. Because I think that's an amazing journey. And I love that you're documenting it, that you're putting it on video and it's not some, you know, politically driven agenda, that people can just see the countries that you visited and to kind of get a almost firsthand experience through what you're filming. I think it's an amazing journey.
Thanks very much, John. It's been I really enjoyed being on your show. Thanks so much for the opportunity, and I look forward to seeing more from you and your podcast.
No problem, man. Thanks a lot for coming on today, and just hang on with me for just a second.
Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review to keep the adventure going. Stay tuned for our next episode, where we'll continue to explore the world tactically. Until then, keep your itineraries tight and your travel spirits adventurous. Safe travels, and see you next time on Tactical Traveler.